This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Two here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Remember, if you miss any of the show, you can always download Money Moves in podcast form wherever you get your podcast. Got into a lot of NFL news, which we will have more to come this hour as well. We will also talk plenty of WNBA. Ed Semia, betting analyst and writer over at Covers.com. Mm-hmm. He's got plays on both of the games coming up today. Our Money Moves College Football Top 25 reveal rolls on this hour as well, where we are officially in the top five. We're nearing the finish line there. But to go back to the National Football League, that is where we will kick things off today.
Join Stormy and JBT as they go on the Money Moves NFL training camp tour.
Oh, yeah. The training camp tour continues today, heading from Nashville, Tennessee to Landover, Maryland. I like the little motion we got from now. That's big time. Home, of course, of the Washington Commanders. They open camp today. JVT went from a 12-win team 2 years ago to a 12-loss team a year ago. Were the Commanders a one-hit wonder, or will they get back to an NFC championship with Jaden Daniels healthy? What are your expectations for this year?
So I'm laughing because I was listening to his preparation. That's why I love technology nowadays. I was listening to a Washington Commanders podcast, and the host for the podcast said, to use the term of like flash in the pan, you don't flash in the pan to the NFC championship game. That's legit. And I was like, like you could totally flash in the pan to the NFC championship game. We've seen tons of teams make
runs. We're about to see this year if the Patriots had a flash in the pan to the Super Bowl. Correct. We're going to find that out today.
Like you can make runs and just never go back to that. So I think there is certainly a possibility, much like with any of these teams we're talking about this sport, you really do focus on quarterback. Jaden Daniels comes in into his third year, and it's a really important year, obviously, because you were so good your rookie season. And similar to what you get when you have these seasons that are cut down by injury, I think just a lot of people look at it and go, cut off by injury, that's fine. You know, we'll just bounce back. And if he's healthy, he's going to go back to what he was at the peak of his powers. And to me, you know, I put on my glasses and say, well, actually, if you actually look, seriously, right? Like there was a couple of red flags for Jaden Daniels last year. Percentage, completion percentage dropped from 68.4% to 60% in the games that he played. I know our audience loves to make fun of me for this, but I'll mention my favorite statistic. He nearly matched his total turnover-worthy plays committed in 245 dropbacks compared to the 736. Committed 12 in his entire season in 2024, had 8 in just the few games that he played last year. So you just wonder when you're looking at Daniels, how much of the regression that we saw before the injuries took place are something we should be worried about, especially with the change at offensive coordinator.
I just feel like it was such a low sample size of what we actually got from Jaden Daniels that I don't really know fully how to unpack it, because he only played in 7 games. Just 4 did he start and finish. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I do look at what the season was without him, and obviously it crashed and burned in 2024. That offense was like 4th or 5th in the National Football League in terms of points per game. They fell to 22nd a year ago. You do make not only offensive coordinator change, but a defensive coordinator change too. Like there's a lot of change and, quite frankly, financial investment that the Washington Commanders have put into this team this year to try to turn things around. The offensive line was an area they looked to bolster again. I mean, $150 million in total guaranteed money in free agency they have put into this in addition to coordinator changes and hoping their quarterback is healthy. So they certainly believe that they're going to be in a position under Dan Quinn to take another step forward. How far of a step can you make, though? Because it is a difficult schedule yet again this year. Your win total, despite, again, just 2 years ago being a 12-win team in an NFC championship, sitting just at 7.5 this year. Can they get to 8+? Can they? I know we talk a lot as we preview a lot of these NFL teams about if a team is going to reach a win total or not. Do you look to some of the alternate numbers as well? Could they be a team that you look at a double-digit win or something like that if you really think they get back to form? Are you more on the high end or the low end? To me, based on just your handicap of Jaden Daniels, it sounds like the low end. But as far as the team at its core, how do you see it?
No, I mean, I think to push back a little bit, I think he's probably just somewhere in between, right? That's sure. My whole thing is I think a lot of people might rush to assume.
He wasn't historically great, but he wasn't as bad as the turnover play numbers and all of that.
That's what I'm saying is I would warn anybody who wants to rush to the point of he's the guy. That he was his rookie season.
Hurt?
No, not at all. It was just a slap. He's the guy that was in his rookie season and made a run to the NFC Championship game. I think the reality is he's somewhere in the middle. And to me, the assessment of the team as a whole is also going to fall squarely on the shoulders of Quinn with these coordinator changes too. you could say what you want, and there is something to the fact of if you don't have a good enough offense, then your defense is going to suffer. We talked about that with Miami the other day when we talked about, yeah, you lost a lot for the Hurricanes, that is. You lost a lot defensively, but if your offense is even better, then you kind of offset that. You know, your offense stunk, not to the point where you should have been 31st in expected points added per play by opponents, not to the point where you were 27th in opponent success rate defensively last year. That, to me, is going to be the real question, is whether or not Daniels is somewhere in the middle, which I believe he's going to be, and they can be average to above average on offense. Is your defense going to be improved enough here that you're going to make a tangible step forward? Because even remember, the year that they made that run in the postseason, they were still about like 17th in a lot of different defensive metrics. They weren't like a great defensive group. They were opportunistic. And remember, too, the unsustainability, going back to the flash in the pan nature of it. Remember the run they were on fourth downs and how good they were?
Yeah.
And the rate at which they got that coin to flip heads that season when they were going for it on those situations? And that dried up, too. So I just wonder if, you know, I think, you know, there are a couple of people that picked them to win the division, I think, in our guide, if I remember correctly, or for sure to make the playoffs. I just think that this is a team that is probably right where the market thinks they are, like a 7-win team. Maybe if the upside hits and Daniels is exactly what he was when he was healthy in his rookie year, they get to that 9-win mark and make it back to the postseason. But I don't see like a giant edge personally where the market's got him, because that's where I think they're pretty much going to be.
The defense, to go back to that side of things, ranked, I mean, bottom six in several categories last year, dead last in yards, bottom 10 against the run and the pass. 11 of their 17 games last year, by the way, went over the total. And that was more for their defensive shortcomings, obviously, than what they were doing on offense. Only the Cowboys had more. But they did, I mean, they have six new defensive starters coming into this year. They draft Sonny Styles, seventh overall in the draft. They add to the pass rush. I think they feel good about the changes that they made in that area. I can't help but look at the schedule, though, and this is something that could perhaps be an approach, maybe. And we know that the difficulty of the schedule is baked into the win totals. Like, obviously, that is a layer to this thing, but their schedule is a lot more difficult on the front end than it is the back end, at least on paper.
Oh, yeah.
So is that something that maybe you want to buy in midway through the year? So if you look at the strength of schedule stuff, the first half of the season, so weeks 1 through 9, they have the second hardest schedule in the National Football League in that span. Then weeks 10 to 18, it's the sixth easiest based on opponent win records from last year.
Yeah, based on win records from last year, but assuming some improvement, yeah, right?
Absolutely. Like, and I know there are some teams in the back half of the schedule you really like.
I mean, you too. To an extent, there's a couple of these teams. We both like the Titans, for example. I think you're relatively high on the Bengals. Are you not with me, too?
I love the Bengals. You like the Falcons, Jags. In Minnesota, right? Vikings. They're teams I like, but on paper, at least.
Sure. But like, my whole point is, what if the upside hits? Because then you're talking about, holy smokes, like two games against Cowboys is going to be brutal. You know, if these JJ McCarthy truthers are real and 9 shows up, then a road game against the Vikings, even with that defense, is going to be great. Very difficult. Your Jaguars, if they're on the road there. So there's a potential that this, when we look back on it, is one of the harder schedules in the National Football League for them. I think ultimately, as I mentioned, to me, you're telling me pick something here. I lean toward under 7.5. I think 7 wins seems about right for this group. I think that they're a team that I don't trust Dan Quinn, and I don't know if they're a great offensive team when you look at the overall skill positions as well and with their overall depth. And I think a lot will be on the shoulders of we'll call it a 2.5-year quarterback. Yeah. Who's got a new offensive coordinator.
I don't know if you remember the conversation we had last offseason about the Commanders, where we were talking about just like the pricing of Jaden Daniels for MVP and the expectations for this team. I got shredded on that video for the way that I was talking about regression possibly coming for this team, and it aged pretty well.
Is on X?
On Instagram.
I got to find this.
But yeah, we can look it up in the commercial. It was on my personal.
If you think that I'm not, we got to go find these people. Come on now.
But like, we talked about like regression, sophomore slumps do happen. Injuries do happen. Like, the schedule is really hard.
Stupid. I love my husband post. Things. Like, oh, come on. Like, let's get really to the.
We don't have to do it on the air right now.
Oh, we do. I would love to. I want to see this for sure.
But because you bring up the Vikings there, the back half of the season, I did want to at least mention real quickly, because you pointed this out going through things. They're going to split reps, JJ McCarthy and Kyler Murray, to start camp, both first team reps. We have a lot more true quarterback competitions going into this NFL season than I feel like we're used to. Because typically you walk into the year and you kind of know who's it's going to be. In college football, we have a ton of quarterback competitions. That's normal. It even bleeds into the season. We don't see that as much in the NFL. We've at least like 3 legit competitions.
Who are we talking about here? So we got, remind me, just off my top of my dome.
Cleveland.
Yep.
Atlanta, Minnesota.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think that all sounds about right. And now I was going to say, Indianapolis. No, we don't have one in Indianapolis. I think you're right. I think Cleveland, you know,
I'll pull it up.
I'm going to invoke our buddies here on a numbers game who we were watching or I was listening to earlier today. I got to tell you, I've been afraid to say this out loud, but I think I'm ready to unveil maybe one of my hottest takes, and it flies directly in the face of you, and you're not going to like it.
What?
I think the Browns might be sneaky good.
No.
I think we actually might get the upside of Deshaun Watson this year. I think you might be wrong about your win total.
There's no way.
I'm just saying.
There's no way. We've seen one good half of football in the last 5 years of that guy.
There's no shot.
Which, by the way, is one of my write-ups in the NFL betting guide, which is out now. So you can go look at my full breakdown of the Cleveland Browns from that standpoint. Remember, if you are betting anything this football season from a future standpoint, the NFL betting guide is your one-stop shop for everything you need. VSiN.com/subscribe. Get in there now. $175 is how you can get unlimited access to everything we do with the network, which includes the guides. And I say guides plural because our college football betting guide will be out next month as well. $175 again, unlimited access to everything we do. VSIN.com/subscribe. I am not a believer. I would prefer Shedeur Sanders to Deshaun Watson.
We'll have to talk more about this when we get to them as part of the training camp tour. Just put it that way.
Okay.
But I'm not afraid anymore. I'll put it at the
Reminder too, on the VSiN Watch app, if you are somebody that has the app, or if not, like, download it right now in the App Store. There is, in addition to like all of the on-demand replays of all of our shows, we have individual breakdowns for each and every one of these team previews that we do throughout the training camp tour, where you can watch them on your own time individually. So obviously today we've got the Commanders. We'll get more coming up.
You definitely oversold the hate that you got on this video. I was more excited.
It was on Twitter too. Okay, hold on. We got to. We will be right back. More Money Moves after this.
Hey, let me get your attention real quick, podcast listeners. I've got something for you that feels too good to be true. First, credit where credit is due. If you're listening to this podcast, you're already leveling up your betting game. You're riding along with our best bets and top angles. And when there's a good game on, you're probably getting involved with a few props and alt markets as well. But there's one more layer if you really want to step things up, and that's VSiN Pro. Yeah, I've mentioned it before, but things are only getting better for our pro subscribers. We just rolled out our MLB prop projections, breaking down some of the best edges across strikeouts, hits, home runs, and more. And that's on top of everything else pro subscribers already get, including public betting splits, expert picks, and betting guides across the sports calendar. If you haven't tried it yet, stop sleeping on it. You can get your first month for just $9.99 or save big with promo code POD26 on an annual subscription. Hit the link in the description and start cashing in with VSiN Pro. All right, now back to the show.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hate on the Jaden Daniels video wasn't as much as
you
we thought, but I swear to you, I mean, there were still most of the comments disagreed with me, but I think it must have been Twitter that I remember when we were live on the air having the conversation, because I had a lot of people tell me that the Commanders were going to be awesome.
Or you're just overtly sensitive and one person said and so you just now are sitting back and thinking, it was one of the worst days of my life.
Considering some of the things that people do say and do to me on social media, I think I have a pretty thick skin, actually.
I've never received a drawing of myself.
I have no comment on that.
I'm just saying.
Why did you do that to me? I have to set us up for some college football talk here in a moment.
I've never been asked to sign a jersey before.
That was uncomfortable. See, stop doing this to me.
Never gotten letters in the mail.
Stop doing this. We can't have this conversation on air right now, and it's so cruel that you're doing this to me. So how about we do my expertise here and one of yours, talk more college football, because we got to roll along with our top 25.
This is the Money Moves College Football Top 25 Rankings.
Can you believe it? Can we are finally breaking into the top five. And before we reveal who our number five team is in the country, I'm curious if you agree with this.
Probably not.
As part of our exercise, I thought coming up with the bottom five teams and the order of the top five teams were the biggest challenge I had going through this.
Yeah, I think so, only because I guess what you're alluding to, like, these next four teams, these two and the next two.
They're all really good.
Yeah, and so I guess to an extent, I didn't, only because, like, we're really splitting atoms. So it's like, okay, you know, I think Texas is better. Okay, I think Georgia's better. Okay, cool. Like, there's not such a difference between these two that, you know, it's not like a Georgia-Boise State thing where it's like, you're an idiot for putting that in there. So I didn't feel too much pressure on putting these in. So you just put them in the order you want, and then we just put them up, and we'll see what happens, what it shakes out. I think really the takeaway is there's not that much separating these teams now that we're talking about inside of our top 25. And I think you'd make the argument, because I have our top 25 up right now, you know, maybe including Indiana and Miami, who we talked about yesterday, but there seems to be a relatively solid line between these teams that I think you truly expect to be one of the few that will be left standing when we get to the national championship game.
So our final top 25 was a compilation of what I put together and what you put together. And I'm trying to like look to see if we had these flopped or if they were close.
Yeah. So I was number four. I had Georgia as the fourth best team in the country. You had them down to seven. You were very low on the Georgia Bulldogs.
I wouldn't say that's very low, but we middled it out and have the Georgia Bulldogs as our number five overall team as we hit that side of things. They obviously have been the SEC champs the last couple of years, trying to see if they can three-peat, favored to do so. And yet over that time where they have been able to win the SEC title game, they haven't been able to even reach the semifinals in order to put themselves in a position to make a national championship. So why are you so high on Georgia this year, especially considering what they have bringing back?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty much it, right? Offensively, they do have a ton coming back that I think is really going to help them. Gunnar Stockton, don't really need to say that much. He is a returning quarterback who produced very well for him last year. You know, the way that I put it in the guide, which was one of the burning questions, do the Bulldogs have a Heisman contender at quarterback? You look at what he did last season for them in the fourth quarter alone, completed 86% of his passes, 8.5 yards per attempt, a total of 9 touchdowns, didn't turn the ball over. It was very good for the Bulldogs on late down. 79th percentile this offense was in late down success rate, despite being 56th in average third down distance. Couldn't really run the ball particularly well, and a lot was on Stockton's shoulders, which is interesting because I know you called him this in our notes, and you're not the only person I've heard say that. You know, there was a thought that he was kind of a game manager, but if you actually kind of look at it, there was a lot of times where this offense was like, hey, Gunner, can you please save us? And like he did for the most part. I think one of the big questions for Georgia coming into this year is not the offense, because you look at what they have coming back on offense. The offensive line should be very good. Full cupboard of running backs that are coming back as well, so that should really help them. Are they going to be able to rush the passer? And I know that sounds like an odd question for Georgia, considering what you think of with Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs' defense. They weren't good defensively, especially when by their standards, and especially when it came to rushing the passer. Just 20 sacks a season ago. They were not good at pressuring opposing quarterbacks. And then the bad news is they go into the transfer portal, Stormy, and they go to Auburn, and they say, Amaris Williams, come on in because we need a pass rusher. He tears his ACL in the spring. So now you're really relying on some young pieces to help supplement a defense and a pass rush that was non-existent last year. That's the reason why they couldn't get to Trinidad Chambliss. It's the reason why he threw for over 300 yards and eliminated them in the postseason. Their pass defense in terms of the back end actually wasn't that bad. It was just you were playing coverage for so long because these guys had so much time, and you wonder if that's going to improve this year.
I think part of why I use the game manager term in our notes is because looking at some of the yards per attempt, example, right? Like 6.75 yards per attempt, fourth lowest among the 83 FBS quarterbacks that had at least 300 attempts last season. Average 220 pass yards per game, which was fifth fewest in the SEC. And 112 screen passes, second most among Power 4 quarterbacks as well, behind only Carson Beck at Miami.
No, and I don't think you're wrong. And I think, because if you remember, I don't think we played this clip, but for sure, I know I at least watched this, but it was Kirby Smart at SEC Media Days was asked about Mike Bobo, their offensive coordinator, because Bobo's become under fire. And I think part of the game manager moniker is not so much, it's not a misconception so much for him. It's the way they called this offense.
Yeah.
You know, going back to what I just referenced, they were not good on early downs. And a lot of it was that. It was Bobo with a high rate of runs on first downs. It was screens. It was not allowing this offense to kind of open up. And so you wonder if you're going to change your philosophy a little bit. Yeah. Will you play 2026 football? Will you throw on first down? Will you try to set up second and shorts? Where then all of a sudden on second and medium or third and medium, when you're talking about second and four, third and four, you have the whole playbook. You can run. You can run play action. You can do all sort of those things. And so will Bobo improve as an offensive coordinator to unlock a Gunnar Stockton, to unlock the offense, to help them become a little bit more explosive and more dangerous? And so that, because again, I don't think you're necessarily wrong on the game manager stuff. I just think so much of it was out of the hands of Gunnar Stockton that maybe in a second year, we're going to see a different version of this offense.
All that to say, we're obviously looking for bets to make. I don't want to take the favorite in the SEC again, but I really like this Georgia Bulldogs team. I think that the schedule lays out pretty nicely for them, especially for the places they have to go on the road. They have a lot of home games this season, two tough road games in Tuscaloosa and then out there at Ole Miss. But other than that, feels very, very manageable. They get Oklahoma at home. They get a number of teams at home that they should be able to handle business again. And one thing that you are always going to like about Georgia is that they win the games they're supposed to win, 48 consecutive games won against unranked opponents. So when you're in that position, you trust this team versus some that maybe could stub their toe and have the trap game situation. Georgia hasn't really done that under Kirby Smart. So win total over, it's juice to high heaven, so I don't have interest in it. If you're looking at something, I guess if you're high on Gunnar Stockton, maybe that's a position that you can look at for Heisman.
Took him 20-1 to win the Heisman. You can go over 10.5 at a plus price as well if you think they're really going to take advantage of it. And remember, just a quick note about the schedule, the cocktail party is not in Jacksonville this year. It is in Atlanta, so that's kind of like a faux home game for them.
Nor is it allowed to be called the cocktail party anymore, but that's a story for another day. Last couple minutes, let's get to number four in our college football Money Moves Top 25. The Texas Longhorns obviously didn't have the season that they wanted last year, but Arch Manning, for all of the hype that he had, did turn it on the back half of the season. And we played some of the sound from Sark about the way that he has carried himself and the way he's developed as a player, as a leader, the step that he is expected to take. He and CJ Carr are your favorites, depending on where you look, who's actually the shorter shot to be the Heisman Trophy winner this year. How do you see things playing out for Texas?
So we can start with Arch Manning, but only by extension, because really I think the focus is, and you've talked about this before, is this offensive line going to be better?
Yeah.
They did add pieces in the transfer portal, so I think you like that. That kid from Wake Forest and Western Kentucky, I think, are the top two names that come to mind. But these are the numbers that stick out to you. Arch Manning pressured on 35.6% of his dropbacks last season. His 165 total dropbacks under pressure, the most in the SEC. In the running game, Texas averaged only 4.2 yards per carry, 138 yards per game. You got to fix those, and those are all offensive line problems. And so, if Arch Manning can all of a sudden be kept upright at a higher rate, and if there's more balance to this offense, he can become more explosive, and all of it, again, was with the big guys up front, then I think you're really looking at a team that can greatly improve, and Arch Manning can finally start to reach the point where the perception of Arch, especially with the football nerds, starts to meet the reality of people who watch this game from a fan standpoint, from a better standpoint, and we realize that he can win a Heisman, that they can be one of the best teams in the country, but a lot of it starts with the five guys that are up front, and I think they did improve that enough.
Those two additions, and you are right, from Wake and Western Kentucky, Melvin Ciani and Lawrence Seymour, very high expectations for them and the guys that they do have coming back in those other starting positions. Belief that they took a step the back end of last year. And I mentioned how good Arch Manning's numbers were the final 10 games of the season. He finished over that span top 11 in FBS in passing touchdowns, rushing touchdowns, QBR, and touchdown interception ratio. Mm-hmm. So 20 touchdowns to four picks the last 10 weeks of the season. After the first couple games, he really, really struggled. And I know level of competition early in the season played into that a little bit as well. And it's a tough start out the gate too with Ohio State in week two. All these SEC schedules are going to be tough. So it's just who you think can be able to manage it better.
Yep. And I would point out too, this is one of the notes in the guide. Look at that schedule, folks. They leave the state of Texas one time until November. And that's when they go on the road to take on Tennessee. They should be able to take advantage of this thing.
JVT once again wrote the entire SEC up for our college football betting guide that will be out in less than a week. If you want access to the guide, you do need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe now. That'll get you access to the NFL betting guide, which is already out right now, and our Fantasy Life Fantasy Football guide that features over 425 player profiles, projections, and rankings as well. The price goes up on August 1st. So if you want the $175 price right now, this discounted rate, you need to sign up soon. VSiN.com/subscribe. We're going to step aside. Hopping into the W next with Ed Semia. We got two games on the card today. He's got bets for both.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Jonathan Von Tobel back with you here on Money Moves. The WNBA post All-Star schedule got underway last night with a 5-game slate, which included, by the way, the Fever with another win and cover. So I dodged a bullet, ultimately not playing the Storm plus 8.5 yesterday. But Fever, most efficient offense in the W, had their fourth straight game reaching triple-digit scoring. Caitlin Clark's tear continues the last four games as well, averaging more than 30 points per game. With 15 to 18 games left in the regular season, can she or anyone catch up to Asia Wilson? To help us break it all down and talk through what is just a short two-game card today, very excited to have Ed Semia join us here on the Progressive Guest Line, betting analyst and writer over at Covers.com. Been covering the W thoroughly. And I know it's a short slate today, but can we start there with the MVP race? Because Asia Wilson's out to like minus 360. There's a good chunk of schedule left, but I don't know if there's enough for anybody to catch her. How do you see it?
Yeah, I just don't see the runway for anyone. I mean, both Caitlin Clark, as you said, on an absolute tear right now. We've also got, Paige Buecher's having a big year. And I think Olivia Miles might be another name people are throwing out there who's been absolutely incredible. But I think the way Asia's playing on both sides of the ball, I don't think there's enough runway for anyone to catch her, barring an injury or something like that.
So let's talk about, mentioning Olivia Miles and her performance yesterday as well, 24 points, the 9-17 shooting. But obviously the news with this team is the fact that Nafisa Collier is back. Couple of games under the belt. What have you seen from Collier, and what do you make of this power rating on this Lynx team now that she is in the fold? Are they far and away the best team in the WNBA?
It's hard to say they're not, right? I mean, they're going to get better with her. She's going to take a little time to integrate, of course. Haven't seen much yet. But this team was already playing like the best team in the WNBA without her on the court. And getting Collier back right now, they have to be far and away the favorites to win the title this year. Now, I think we have a deep field of contenders, more than we've seen in almost any other season. So we could have a pretty unpredictable postseason coming in our way. But it's the Lynx title to lose right now, especially if they can integrate Collier the way we all think they will.
I just wanted to note that I would hate to see when she gets her legs back under her, because in two games, Collier's been pretty freaking good already. Yeah. So you mentioned maybe the deeper...
And you do have to say legs again, because it's both ankles were injured.
But you mentioned the deeper field of contenders. So I'll ask you, how deep does this go? Where would you draw the line?
So, you have to consider the Aces as real contenders always. No doubt about it. The Fever, are coming on with the way Clark's playing. Maybe you consider Valkyrie's Wings. I have concerns about the Liberty, because early in the year I would have said Liberty, of course, a contender, but are they ever going to be healthy? And if they are, even when they are, do they have what it takes to beat the Lynx or the Aces? I don't know. But yeah, you're looking at four or five teams, I think, that at least you have to consider have some outside chance, dark horse potential. Minnesota and Las Vegas, though, are going to be your favorites. And I think Minnesota clear number one right now.
Yeah, from an odd standpoint, looking at FanDuel, who has these up right now, plus 105, the Aces plus 390, Liberty 8-1, Valkyries 9-1, Dream 11-1, and then the Fever 13-1 before odds get much longer for the Dallas Wings. Do you have a favorite among that group, though, a team in particular that you are really high on potentially making a run?
Among that second tier group, I think if you're going to go out on a limb right now and pick one of them, it might be the Fever. We've seen some projections, some power rankings start to rate them very highly. Some of the underlying numbers look really good. As you said earlier, most efficient offense in the league. I don't think they have what it takes yet. I think this is a team for the future, not this year. But if you want to take a flyer, I think that's the way to go right now.
All right, let's before we get to some of the games and some more important things, we have at the desk here been presented some breaking information that we have to get with you on. But before we get to that, really quickly, last point on Asia Wilson. We've talked about the MVP candidacy. Could she double dip and take Defensive Player of the Year as well? Or are the Aces not good enough? Because you look at this right now for that market, Gabby Williams is minus 175 for one of the best defensive teams in the league, the Valkyries. But Asia Wilson has been pretty good for a team that's been very average on defense for the season.
Yeah, that could be a close race, and there's still plenty of runway for that one. We've got, like you said, another 15 to 18 games depending on the team. I think if you asked me who the best defensive player is, I think it's Wilson. But you're right, that team performance and how much they impact how their team's defensive stats are. I think maybe you're looking at Gabby to take that one right now if you had to make a pick today.
Okay, let's look at the two games that we have coming up today. Dream and Wings, the Valkyries and Mercury. You have a play on both games, but which of the two do you like better? Where do you want to start?
Why don't we start with the Valkyries and the Mercury, where I have the I have Golden State to cover on the road here. We've already seen Golden State beat Phoenix twice this year. They just came off a 9-game winning streak. They're playing as well as they have, you know, in the short existence of the franchise. And they won both games fairly comfortably. Now, you know, a lot of that's due to their defense. We do have to worry about Gabby Williams being questionable tonight. But I expect her to play, at least from what I've seen. They don't commit turnovers. They shut down other opposing offenses. And it's really been tough for Phoenix to generate offense against them in those first two games. One of the biggest things I've seen in those matchups, Kayla Cooper, who's scoring 20.5 points a game this year, only averaging 10 in those two games against Golden State. So I like the Valkyries to win, even on the road. Get the cover there.
All right, what about our second game here later today? Dream and Wings total, I think, is your play here?
Yeah, I'm going with the total, and I'm going with the under. And that might be surprising. These teams have been putting up a lot of points lately, but they have hit the under in both of their games this year. We know Dallas likes to slow the game down a little bit. These teams are both top five in the league when it comes to scoring defense. One of the big things here, these are not teams that give up second chances. They're the two best teams in the league when it comes to defensive rebounding rate. They don't turn the ball over. They don't commit a ton of fouls, so on and so forth. So even with all the star power on the court here, I think the under is the play.
One of the things I was going to ask you, and I noted this when we talked about this yesterday, and we were teasing out to your spot, Dream are 1-10 ATS in their last 11 games. What have you made of this? The market just got too high when they were on this hot run? Because they can't cover a number to save their lives.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there specifically. You may be right that the market's caught up. It might just be a run of bad form. No real way to put it. I would expect that to turn around. I'm still higher on this team than that number would suggest. I don't see them as a top tier contender. We were talking about contenders. I do think they're in that second tier with some of the other teams we were talking about, Wings, Fever, that sort of team. And they will play better. In fact, if I had to make a spread pick, I'm probably taking the Dream tonight to win this game. But I prefer the under. I prefer the total here.
Just the last cherry on top of that, of these games, Stormy, six of them, the Dream have closed as about double-digit favorites. So it's probably maybe part of the reason, too. Big numbers for them.
Coverage.com betting analyst and writer Ed Semia joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Also, moonlights as a competitive curler and longtime Yale curling coach. And I have to tell you, I went curling for the first time a few weeks ago. And it was one of the funnest things I have ever done. Like, how did you get into curling? And what do I need to do to put myself in position to have success in this sport? Because it is a new obsession of mine.
I have not been out to the Las Vegas club yet. I've heard it's gorgeous. If that's where you did it.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah. I started around 2010. Same thing as a lot of people. I saw it on the Olympics. I wanted to try it. And as I did it for several years, I got more competitive at it. I do play like on tour. I've played they became stars during the Olympics, Corey and Corey, the mixed doubles team. I've played against them. I know them. I've played the men's, Olympic teams, a couple times. If you want to get better, it's like anything else. Practice, 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 slide, 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 throw a lot of rocks. But yeah, I love the sport. I played more traditional sports when I was younger. I was a basketball player. I did a lot of stuff, and I tried it, loved it, have been doing it for 16 years now, and no plans on stopping.
Ed, sweeping is deceivingly challenging. It is like, it is a full workout, and you get miles in playing a full match.
Yeah. We tell people that all the time. Like we do learn to curls at my local club here. Of course, probably something like what you did. And, you know, there's a fair number who will come in. It looks so easy on TV. Anyone can do this. Sweeping is a serious cardio workout. That's why you see it's become a younger, more athletic sport. If you've watched the Olympics the last four or five times, it's such a big advantage with these teams that have people in their 20s and big guys, especially on the men's side, who are the sweepers, the main sweepers, the front end players, as we would say. So, yeah, no, it's deceptively athletic as a sport. You know, it's not basketball or soccer or anything, but it is more than people see when they see on TV, for sure.
Absolutely. Ed, thank you for indulging me. I appreciate it. And thanks for the breakdowns as well in the W. Have a wonderful day.
You guys too. Have a great day.
Ed Semia. And so this is why you want to be the skip. Getting a little curling 101 here. The skip is kind of the captain of sorts that you stand on the back end and instruct where you want the stones to go when you're curling. And that means you only, your sweeping is limited. You're more in control and like yelling at everybody to do the sweeping versus having to be the sweeper. It's a great time, I gotta say. Okay, we'll be right back on Money Moves. Wrapping things up after this.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The sports calendar never stops, and our friends at the Sharp Plays are covering it all, winning for 15 straight years. All the plays documented, logs posted publicly as well at sharpplays.com, and we know that kind of transparency is rare in the industry. Remember, when the Sharp Plays moves, sportsbooks take notice. They've got advanced AI, trusted insider intel. They're finding value before numbers shift, and you can too. Start winning with them over at sharpplays.com. That's sharpplays.com.
So you want to read, so what report just came down?
About the Panthers?
No, about the Cleveland Browns.
Deshaun Watson threw a couple of picks early in practice today. Hmm.
Can I read you a headline?
Oh, gosh, what?
This is from 2018. New Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes has 7 interceptions in 6 practices. It means nothing.
You know what? What did Patrick Mahomes go on to do in the 2018 season and the years following? Because if I recall, Deshaun Watson in his career has not done anything nearly close to what Patrick Mahomes has done.
I mean, that's fine. I'm just saying that training camp picks
very different people.
Absolutely nothing.
Speaking of training camp, Panthers just got some bad news.
Okay, what is it?
Chris Brazel, rookie wide receiver out of Tennessee, tore his LCL at practice today. I hate this. That it's like the first couple days of practice. Well, the Panthers already had their Nick Skorton out of Texas A&M. He was injured the first day, too. He's done for the season with a torn ACL. So it is not going well with some of these early injuries at training camp. I already mentioned for my team, the San Francisco 49ers, some of the injuries that were coming down this morning, and Ricky Pearsall dealing with swelling in his knee among them. So not ideal. Speaking of Tennessee, though, I did want to bring this to your attention because you are somebody who's very high on the Volunteers going into this 2026 college football season. JVT wrote up the SEC in our college football betting guide that's out right now. But Arian Carter, star linebacker for Tennessee, led the SEC in tackles per game this past year, suspended by the NCAA for 2 games, the violation, when he decided to return to college, had his agent pay for a $427 flight prior to that decision for him to go to a pre-draft training facility. Carter repaid his agent for the flight cost and withdrew from the draft because he suffered an injury that required surgery out of that. So he elected to come back to college, repaid the agent that he hired when he thought that he was going into the NFL draft, and is now suspended for the first 2 weeks of the season. In an era of college football,
God forbid,
that is all about money and NIL and players have agents for their marketing and like different things like that, it is a little bit crazy for me how we are still playing this game.
A little bit, yeah, I would say.
I understand that it is a rule and it's a level 3 violation, right? But like, it's in 2026, are these, he didn't like break his amateurism, you know?
No, I'm with you. I think it's really stupid. But I'll say this because I'm pulling up something really quick in my write-up so I can get the exact numbers and names for you here. But I think linebacker was generally, I think, going to be a position of strength for them. So it's not brutal. One of the big names that they got in the transfer portal is Amari Campbell from Penn State. He actually led the Nittany Lions in tackles last year. So I think that's something that is going to be, at least you could offset, right, some of the absence there at the beginning of the season. And on top of that, you said 2 games, correct?
Yeah, first
Furman,
2 weeks of the season.
Furman on the road against Georgia Tech. So those are opportunities, especially if they're on offense, as good as I think they're going to be, then potentially you can really feel relatively fine with that absence. But it is still ridiculous nonetheless.
Just to give you the timeline, he declared for the 2026 draft following his junior season, hired a sports agent who paid for his flight for him to go to a pre-draft training facility. Again, $427. Yeah. He immediately at the workout felt pain and swelling in his foot. Medical staff treated the injury. He had an MRI, ended up needing surgery, corrective care. He withdrew from the draft, says that he's going to come back to Tennessee to recover from the injury, graduate in August, and play his senior season. even though he terminated his contract with the agent and paid him back, and the school is backing him, obviously, as you would expect. But current legislation permits student athletes nationwide to have marketing representation, and through this representation have received benefits not unlike the nominal benefit here is UT's argument against it. However, the rules are what they are. So there you go. Was there another bet? Sorry, what were the bets that you made ultimately on Tennessee?
I think over the win total for sure is just the way to go with Tennessee. And I do think there's, and by the way, it's 7.5 overs minus 105, small dog price. You look at the schedule here. Look, I think that they should be able to go out there and beat Georgia Tech. So Furman, Georgia Tech, Kennesaw State, pretty good shot. You're 3-0 by the time you get into that home game against Texas. And the good thing about their schedule is the tougher opponents, you do get them at home. You get Texas at home. I think we'll include Auburn in that. One of the win totals I wrote up and that I've added to the portfolio, Auburn on over the win total. But still, you get the Tigers at home. That's going to be a benefit for you. You get Alabama at home. And you get LSU at home. You do have to go out to Texas A&M. It's going to be somewhat difficult. But Stormy, look at this schedule. If you do start 3-0, the rest of these games, when you're talking about Arkansas on the schedule, South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, I think you could steal a couple of almost all of those. If you sweep through those, then you're talking about maybe springing an upset somewhere. And maybe it's against Texas A&M. Maybe it's against Texas at home or Alabama at home or Auburn. But either way, I think there's a pretty good opportunity for this team to get to 8 wins. They have averaged at least 30 points per game. 31.3, I think, is the exact number in every season under Heupel. It's all about a young freshman for a 5-star quarterback. If Faison Brandon's going to hit, I think there's going to be some danger here. But I do think that this is a team that is loaded for bear and really came away quite impressed with them. So over 7.5 on the win total. And I'll just say, because they're in the SEC and because the schedule presents the way that it does, and this has to be the upside season, everything goes right for them. Brandon's absolutely fantastic. There is a very strong path, a very clear path to a college football playoff should they take care of their business.
Yeah, and the on defense, who you hired is DC, and Jim Knowles is pretty nice feather in the cap. He hasn't had a defense outside of the top 25 in the last 3 years.
It's always interesting. You know, he is a very respected, and rightfully so, defensive coordinator. He's bounced around everywhere over the last couple of seasons.
I don't think that...
he is somewhat mercenary-esque.
I don't think that his demeanor always jives well with certain types of head coaches.
Sure. So, I also think because Penn State was last year.
Yeah.
So I also got, I think, a little unlucky there too, right? Where
fair.
I mean, everything blew up and then you're probably looking for a job. But to your, I mean, what, he was at Oklahoma State for a while, but that was only 3 years, Ohio State, then Penn State for a season, and now here. So we'll see how long
I mean, like
lasts.
What he did at Ohio State, obviously.
Sure.
Then
what they do.
I just don't, well, won a national championship. I just don't think he and Ryan Day necessarily jived particularly well. But I think that's a really nice addition for Tennessee as they try to rebound on defense. And are you a little bit sad as someone who likes Tennessee that Joey Aguilar was not granted his 12th year of eligibility?
Yeah, I know. There's a, you know, I can never remember. Who's the former South Carolina quarterback that played for like 20 years? You remember this? I'm going to look this up right now. The name, when I say it, is going to get you.
It'll hit instantly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's so many of those guys now, though, that you're like, oh, what year are you on right now?
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, Diego Pavia is probably still sad he couldn't get another one.
Yeah, I got to find this. I'm going to find this name. If anybody can know, Steven Garcia. That's who it is. You don't remember Steven Garcia?
Did Diego Pavia get cut already?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He got cut like a week ago.
Yeah. Like that's what I was thinking. I was like, didn't that already happen?
Yeah. No, by the way, that team, too. That's going to be an interesting group. Yeah. Because I think Clark Lee's done a pretty good job with that team overall, especially, you know, when you're brought in to do that. I think that's his alma mater, if I remember correctly. But like Lee's done a pretty good job. But they're another one of these teams. You mentioned all the quarterback battles that are happening. There's quite a few teams here in the SEC that are relying on some true freshmen potentially to come in and do a really good or at least do a lot at the quarterback position. And they're not going to be any different. And they have this kid, Jared Curtis, second best prospect of his class, and according to 24/7, I think this is the highest rated prospect they've landed at Vanderbilt, but largely expected to take over a quarterback in the post-Diego Pavia era. But when you're rebuilding at certain positions, like the offensive line, you do wonder if this is going to be a little bit of a rough patch for Vandy post-Diego Pavia.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if it wasn't Curtis, but it is always tough when you're starting a true freshman from day one. They do have senior Blake Berlewitz in the room as well, and two more veteran quarterback options in the, you know, quote-unquote competition, but haven't made a firm decision on that yet. But you're also replacing a guy who, when you look at some of the numbers, in addition to finishing second in the Heisman Trophy voting, even though he thought he should have won, obviously, that is a huge loss for what he was able to do for that offense when all is said and done. This Curtis kid, though, number two quarterback out of high school, number three overall player, first 5-star in Vandy history. He's gotten a lot of Matthew Stafford comps. So there's high expectations for him, but it's hard to know what that's going to be out the gate.
So I know you read through my burning questions for all of the teams. How much of the actual writing did you read?
I could only read so much in one sitting.
Well, because I was curious.
I was going through specifically for your asks.
If you read about what I said about Lenore Sellers.
No, I didn't. What'd you say about my boy?
My question was, is he going to revert back to form as a passer? Because he was not great. I mean, he dipped from 64.8% to 59.8%. Five fewer touchdown passes, only five fewer attempts. One of the things that really sticks out, play from a clean pocket declined in like a really bad way.
Yeah, but the offensive line was terrible.
Well, that's why I just said his play from a clean pocket declined in a very bad way. And so you do wonder if that regression is real, or with a new offensive coordinator, you're going to really start to turn things around.
That was going
to
be my follow-up. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's not like the play calling was any better and put him in good situations.
Which leads to my second burning question for South Carolina. What does the addition of Kendall Briles do for this offense? See, we cover all the bases.
I think they're going to be a lot better this year.
I went under.
But what is their win total?
6.5.
Nah.
So you can still win 6 games and be successful.
I think they're a 7 or 8 win team.
My dramatic question was, how sturdy is the ground on which Shane Beamer walks?
I mean, yeah, it feels like a make it or break it type of a year. I mean, was it 9 games in that they fired Shula last year?
It was pretty early.
It clearly was not working.
I didn't even earlier, actually.
It's fun having all these college football conversations. We're here, ladies and gentlemen. My ESPN college football seminar is coming up next week. Like, that is usually my, all right, we are knee deep in this thing, getting prepped for the season. That's a wrap for us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. But stick around, Follow the Money coming up next. Mitch Moss and Dustin Swedelson in studio for you. Have a great day, everybody.